This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
On this episode of Complicated Conversations, we welcome back Mary Kubica. Mary is the New York Times bestselling author of 9 novels, including The Good Girl, Local Woman Missing, and Just the Nicest Couple. Her books have been translated into over 30 languages and have sold over 2 million copies worldwide. She lives outside Chicago with her husband and children. Her 9th novel, She's Not Sorry, is out now. Welcome back to Pop Fiction Women, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah. Why don't you start by telling our listeners a little bit about She's Not Sorry?
Sure. So She's Not Sorry is the story of an ICU nurse named Megan Michaels. And Megan has always made it a point to just stay a little detached emotionally from her patients. And then she gets this one patient on her unit who is believed to have jumped from a bridge in a suicide attempt. And the woman is unconscious. And Megan just kind of gets taken with her story, and she finds herself getting unintentionally close to the people who come to visit this woman. And then in time, it starts to become more and more apparent that maybe she didn't jump, but that she was actually pushed from this bridge. And so now Megan is left wondering if she's gotten too close to the wrong people and inadvertently put herself and her own teenage daughter at risk.
That you said that so well, because there's so many spoilers. Yeah. And that was very elegant.
Thank you.
Yes. So we're going to get deeper into all of this, but I want to start when last time you were here, you said that your writing process is that the first thing that comes to you is like a seed for an idea. So in Just the Nicest Couple, it was the hook of a missing husband. So what was the seed here for She's Not Sorry?
So with She's Not Sorry, it actually happened the other way around, which is so rare for me. So this is, I'm going to be very vague here, the twist is what came to me first.
Oh, and wow.
It almost came as more of like a concept, not, you know, a fully, developed idea. So I thought, oh, it would be cool to do this kind of thing, you know, and then I had to take a step back and create characters and a story to make that happen. So it was a much different process than Just the Nicest Couple or really like the vast majority of my previous books, to have that ending in mind, but to then have to go back to the beginning and work my way to it.
That is really fascinating, because also I think I've read them all, but I don't always recall everything. But I think this is your first story told from one point of view, right?
It is. Yeah.
So you're breaking all your own rules with this one.
I know. Yeah. And yeah, because I've always said until this book, you know, all of my books will have multiple narrators. But with this one, you know, I thought, do we need to hear from anybody else? But ultimately decided, no, you know, that Megan was fit to tell the whole story herself.
I agree. That. Yeah. And I think this is one of maybe my favorite book. I mean, the first one you read is always like the one you love, but this is so breaking your rules worked for you here.
It did, you know, and it's kind of fun to think that 9 books into it, you know, you can do something new, you know, you can try
fresh,
totally different, right? And so it was fun, you know. I mean, it was just, I never honestly, like, it sounds terrible to say, but I never thought I could write a book from just one point of view. I thought I as the writer would start to lose interest, or that there just wouldn't be enough substance there from one person's perspective to carry me through. But that was not at all an issue with this book. And I was taken, I feel like the writing process gets a little easier the more I get to know my characters, but I was taken with Megan right away. I felt like I just really understood her as a person. And so it made it so much easier to stick with her for the whole book.
Wow. That is funny. Yeah. So let's talk about Megan. She's a single mom. She's working full time as an ICU nurse. What was the inspiration for her character, and how did you get to know her?
Yeah. So it's actually funny. When I started this idea, and then There's sort of like an opening scene where we just see Megan interacting with, it's not right at the beginning, it's a chapter or two in, a couple chapters in, but we see Megan interacting with her teenage daughter, Sienna. And it's just kind of, you know, a pretty casual exchange. Mm-hmm. Megan comes home, Sienna's at the apartment with a boy, and, yeah. you know, so there's that. But it was actually something that I had written in a book that I had abandoned, like, during COVID. And it was just, you know, a couple chapters that I had started that never had legs, and I had set them aside. And when I started writing this book, I remembered that scene. And so I went back and I pulled it, and I thought, I think I could use that here. And so I put it in She's Not Sorry. And, you know, this character and this complex relationship with her daughter started to take shape. So it was sort of unintentional, you know, when I was just repurposing something that I had used before, but it fit so well. And that's kind of a funny thing about writing, was this was something I had started years ago and thought, you know, it's never going to be anything. And now here it is, you know, starting
a seed of something yeah. else. Yeah.
Yes. Right. So, and I, you know, I'm not a plotter at all. I don't really spend time trying to get to know my characters before I write. I just write them and get to know them in the process. So it was just, you know, as I created Megan's, you know, home and work life, and, you know, just I started to get to know her in that way.
Wow. You know, we say that books find us when that we need them and at the right time. It's like that passage you wrote, or those chapters found their way back to you when you when you needed it. I love that.
Absolutely.
And just continuing with Megan, I mean, her career as a nurse, she, as you said, she's an ICU nurse, is vital really to understanding her character. And so many readers, I do think, love a hospital setting. I mean, how many medical TV dramas do we know? But I was really taken in by the detail that you gave about her career as a nurse. And like I said, how vital that was to the story. So what kind of research did you do for the novel? I know you've thanked some people in your acknowledgments. So, and this level of detail I had to know came from definitely talking to nurses.
For sure. Yes. You know, as soon as I knew that I wanted her to be a nurse, there was no doubt that I had to get it right. And it was hard, you know, when I really started to write, it wasn't even just, you know, the specific, like the more scientific medical conversations, but it was the everyday. Okay, well, you arrive to work. What do you do? You know,
yeah.
like where do you put your stuff and just like all of that. So I did a lot of research on my own, but then I'm really fortunate that I have a number of women friends who are ICU nurses. And then I had another one in nursing school at the time. So I just had a wonderful group of people that I could talk to. So what I ended up doing was I did as much research as I could, but then I asked just two of these women because I knew that many of the questions I was going to ask were also going to go into spoiler territory. So, and I wanted some totally fresh reads with people not knowing where the book was going. So I asked just a couple of the women my very specific questions to help me write the book. And then I asked the others to just read once I had a solid draft done. I think my editor and I had gone through most of our revisions. But then I asked these other women to just read the book, go in blind, and, you know, just tell me what I messed up. And so that was so helpful. And thank goodness from the feedback that I've seen so far, reviews from nurses and things like that, it seems like I got stuff right. So I was happy. And yeah. I was trying to find that balance between, you know, very clearly medical setting, you know, I want Megan to come across as really knowledgeable, but you also don't want to give too much, you know, you don't want to bore yeah. the read also with the medical jargon.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like just show what this is everything I learned. but people think of research as like, you know, history or a historic event, but research is character. It is who your character is, what they do for a living. There's so many where they live. You set all of yours in Chicago, but still it's research.
That's and the research. Emotional element of being yeah. a nurse. I mean, that you really capture that. And that's research too. Like, what does it feel like? I mean, and the ways I'm sure nurses do get invested as she does in care. How could you not? I mean, so there's that whole emotional aspect that I thought and psychological aspect of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a contradiction. You right? set out to help people, but yet they yeah. have to have this emotional detachment.
Yes, yeah. yes. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about motherhood because your books so often grapple with motherhood, from Eve, whose adult daughter is missing in your debut, The Good Girl, to Lily's fertility struggles in Just the Nicest Couple. And here, Megan is experiencing that kind of push-pull of having a teenage daughter, Sienna. I know that motherhood is often a hallmark of domestic suspense, but what draws you to that theme over and over?
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly that I'm a mother, you know, and for me, I can't separate that. I think too, you know, so many of the, I've written many male characters, but so many of my protagonists are females, and I feel like it's so relatable. And when I set out to write a new book or, you know, just in this genre, I think that that's one of my goals is I, of course, wanted to be page turning, suspenseful. I want all of that. But I also want characters that my readers can really connect with. You know, it doesn't mean you have to like them or agree with the choices they're making. But I want my reader to feel just that they're very human, you know, they're flawed. And I think that by, you know, having all these mothers, it makes them relatable to my readers, to myself as a writer. And so these are just, you know, everyday things that, you know, so many things that Megan and Sienna experience are just everyday ordinary things that we all experience, you know, with our children every day. And so even though they're put in this like horribly complex situation in this book, they're also just everyday ordinary people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the piece you relate to because, you know, not everyone's a nurse or not everyone, but these scenes that make the characters three-dimensional, right? You've had their home life, their work life, what they're struggling with, and then the circumstances that you, dire circumstances that you put them in this book. So, yeah.
And I can tell you, as a mother of teenage sons, not daughters, it is still relatable, that push-pull of the teenager dynamic. So you definitely nailed that. Thank you. So, but it's not just motherhood. You always tackle what it's like to be a woman with a very keen and, I would say, accurate eye. The storyline with Nat, the attacks on the local single women, the fear and anxiety for women in this story is like up to a 10. I mean, I am not often scared in thrillers. I know I'm supposed to be. And there are some where, you know, visceral reactions, though, to me, like this one really hit me. Like I felt like I'm being watched or someone's following me or like in the way that it's happening for her. So talk to us about writing those elements. And do you hear or feel that readers, like we're saying, feel seen by your novels?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for women, you know, walking home alone at night is, we hear about it, you know, unfortunately, so often that things go terribly wrong. And, you know, there's the contradiction of just how much more vigilant women need to be when they're alone at night versus men and just, you know, all the terrible things that can happen. And it's always been, unfortunately, you know, happening. I feel like in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, it's just that much more predominant, you know, and, you know, so many, you know, pieces of advice, like don't talk on your phone and just be more alert and just things that we have to do that our male counterparts don't have to worry about. So this is something that's just so real and it happens. And so that's another thing that I really try to do in my books is just make it so authentic. And so here's Megan, you know, she walks home from work, the commute's about a mile long and, you know, she does this every night. It's winter. So when she leaves work, it's already dark. And, you know, most of the trip is okay. It's busy streets, but then there's the part where she has to go on the more residential streets to get to her apartment. And that's where things, you know, that fear constantly rises because we have a man out there on the streets of Chicago attacking women. And that's just constantly on her mind. And, you know, so there are a lot of things, you know, she always tries to have her keys ready and she always tries to be really paying attention to where she's going. But again, it's just one of those things that's so unfortunately prevalent in society. And I think, again, to work it into a book, number one is just sort of like a cautionary tale for people, like this does happen. But number two, of course, it just adds to the suspense of the novel.
Yeah.
But it is something that even if it hasn't happened to you, it's something, there are things we're taught, you know, I always am paying attention and have your keys ready and all these things, little things that we've been taught for our own good, it still makes us vigilant in ways that maybe men aren't.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk about heroes and villains and good and bad. You've always have good people doing bad things or bad people doing unthinkable things. You've always explored that gray area, but you really take it far in this novel. No spoilers, but I think if there's a hallmark for me, you paint pictures of desperate people. They're put in these circumstances and their character is tested to unimaginable degrees. Are you drawn to this nuance of good and evil in real life? Or are you just like, this makes for a really good story?
You know, I feel like there are a lot of books out there where, you know, the antagonist is like a psychopath, you know, and I don't feel like there are very many psychopaths in the real world. You know, that's just, it's such a rare thing. And to me, you know, we have, you know, criminals or people making really poor choices because of their circumstance. And that's something that I like to really explore in my books, you know? So I think again, too, it makes everything that much more, you know, like relatable and believable for people to be doing these awful things because their back is to a wall versus they're just like innately bad. Cause I don't think that many people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. So you mentioned, I do want to return to the twist here, though, just not actually the twist. We are not giving anything away, but the writing of the twists, because you are known for writing twists. This one is, now that I know that this is what was the seed of the idea, it's sort of like, okay, this makes sense, because I don't know if you read Goodreads reviews, and Corinne is having an interesting relationship with that as a debut author, but I will tell you, if you haven't, people are just obsessed with this twist and the twists in this one, like just how good and how you've taken it to the next level. And do you think that is because maybe this is what came to you first with this one, which is not your normal, but just generally, like how do they normally come to you? And like the twists are sort of, they're big. And
yeah. You know, this one, and Corinne, I'll tell you, Goodreads is, it's, I understand why you're having, I'm notorious for, you know, when you have a new book that's like not out yet and those early reviews are coming, yes. I look, they say not to look, but I will look because I'm curious always to know how a book is doing. And I am sure you've been peeking too, because it's hard not to.
Yes.
But then what I would notice, I've cut myself off because I noticed that they're predominantly good, but that one negative review is the one stays. That I keep seeing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It stays with you. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, so there could be like one negative review and 10 positive reviews, and that's the only one I'm remembering. So just keep that in mind. Yeah.
Okay,
I don't know. It's just human nature, I think, but it's an incredible book, I have to say, The Astrology House, and it should have all positive reviews.
Yeah,
but Goodreads is a scary place for an author.
But can I tell you, when I was reading She's Not Sorry, chapter 20, the end of that first paragraph, I was like, oh, I really gasped out loud. And I feel that way so many times when I'm reading, but this one I literally gasped.
And that's what the people on Goodreads are saying. They're like, holy cow. Yeah.
And then,
like, this one.
Then it's a steam train to the end, because you're then like, you just what roll is happening?
It. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, you know, the twist is, it's so, I mean, it's kind of everything in these books, like no pressure to the author.
I know.
I know.
Right.
I know it's true though.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like everything hinges on the twist, and you're not, as an author, you're not going to get every reader every time. So that's what makes it so fulfilling when you do get the vast majority of the readers. So this has been a wonderful treat and surprise, you know, to see the way people are reacting to the twist. So I'm so grateful, so happy that it did work out. I never know, you know, I feel like I've learned with every book kind of what works, what doesn't work. Like, I'm picking up kind of on some of that feedback that I'm seeing. And so I always have that in the back of my mind. But as an author, especially, for example, here, I knew the twist. So it's hard to know, okay, are the clues too heavy? Or the flip side, are there not enough that the reader's going to feel like this twist came out of nowhere and it's totally unearned? So there's, you have to find that balance there. But I think because so much hinges on the twist, it is just such a relief when it works.
And but, do you do that all yourself in your contained process? Because I will say I got a lot of help. I had twists, but my editor was like, more twists, bigger twists, you know, like, so I needed help with that.
Yeah. So there was one book. The only other book that I knew the twist going into it was The Other Misses. Uh-huh. And I had, when I wrote a proposal for my editor, this, you only make this mistake once, I put the twist in there and then realized that when it came time for her to edit it, it was hard because she knew where it was going. Mm, so, yeah. You know, it was hard to know, were the clues too heavy, things like that. So I vowed to never give a twist away to anybody, you know, until they had read the book. So with She's Not Sorry, it was great because, you know, I did everything that I could and then sent it to her. So when she read, she had no idea where it was going.
Oh, wow.
So she was able to help if things were, you know, if we needed more clarity or if they're just, if things were too heavy handed, then I could pull back and things like that.
Oh, wow. That's so good. So good.
I want to ask you about the title.
Yeah.
She's Not Sorry. I'm not good with titles. I don't like titles. Coming up with them is hard. And we've heard this so many times. Where did this title come from? And was it from you or in the process of putting the book together?
Yeah. So it was my editor and I, the book was done. I think she and I were going through revisions and she and I just started brainstorming a list of titles. After the first book or two, I realized that coming up with a title is not a me decision, but it's a group decision. And, you know, there are a lot of hands involved.
It is, yeah.
Which is great because I feel like sales, marketing, so many people have, you know, a different eye towards titles than I do. And I think sometimes as authors, we're almost too close to the book anyways that, mm-hmm. you know, we're speaking from like an emotional sense versus, you know, why are they going to just gravitate towards this book based on the title?
Yes.
So She's Not Sorry that, you know, the text, it's in there at least once, maybe two times it's in the book. And so it's one of those things that like during revisions, when we're really starting to think about titles that kind of popped out and there were many others that, gosh, and I can't think of any right now, of course, but there were others that we thought might be the one and that would later get vetoed. But so she and I just kind of came up with a list and then sent it on to, you know, the rest of the team and people took a vote and She's Not Sorry won. And I think it's, I love the title. I mean, it's catchy. And
yes.
It also too, though, you know, as you read it, you as a reader wonder who is the she referring to?
Yes. What did you save it as then? If you know already, it sounds like after book two, you're not, do you name it and give it something or just like book nine,
book 10? Book nine. Exactly.
Yes. I knew it. I was like, she's just like, that's it. I'm not even going to try.
I think the good girl, when I sold the good girl, you know, had a different title, went through a couple different title changes. Then I think my second book is Pretty Baby. And I think I turned it in with a title. I can't remember what now, you know, something I thought I loved. And then I realized, oh, that's not going to stick. So then it wasn't even worth the effort of thinking of titles after that.
Don't name the puppies. They said, don't get attached. Right? So just
that is my path. That will be my path for sure. So this is your ninth novel. Do you have a favorite book? And you can tell us what it is or not, but what I really want to know, or don't tell us what it is, but why is it your favorite would be my question. Was it a challenge? Yes. Did it come easily to you?
So I think I would say there are two. The Good Girl, because it was my first, you know, it was so different. It was such a different experience than any others. It was the only book I ever wrote. You know, it wasn't sold. I didn't have an agent. I didn't even know if I would finish it. So there was no pressure, you know, other than like self-imposed pressure. You know, I didn't have to impress anybody. It was none of that. I was just writing this book for myself. And it took me 5 years. There was no deadline, you know, so it was such a different experience. Everything else, you know, had a deadline. And because The Good Girl did well, it had expectations. And, you know, so the pressure was kind of on. So it was different. And then the other one I would say is Local Woman Missing, just because, you know, that book, just there are like cooperative books and there are uncooperative books.
Yes.
And that book just cooperated. You know, I connected with the characters. I just, that storyline kind of fell into place. And I don't want to say it was an easy book to write because they're not.
It's never easy.
Right? But it was just, didn't put up such a fight that other books do.
Cooperative. Yes. I like that.
I love that too.
It's better than easy. You're right. Because easy is a misnomer. None of them are easy, but cooperative
is. Yes. I love that. Well, we'd like to end today with a lightning round. If you're up for a couple questions about reading and writing.
Okay.
Favorite book as a child.
Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. How do you read? Paper, e-reader, and audio?
Okay, so it's a combo. So I do a lot of audiobooks, but I will also do physical books.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Do you write?
That's the right answer, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you write with music or ambient noise or total silence?
Total silence.
Okay.
Wow. Another There's one. A lot of total silence. Okay. Planning, drafting, or revision, which takes the most time for you and which is your favorite?
Drafting takes the most time and is also my favorite because anything can happen. I feel like at that point, it's just so new, you know, I could go anywhere with it.
Yes. I love that.
So I guess our final one, which is not speed, you can tell us as much as you like, but is what are you loving? You know, if you've read something, watched something, listened to something that you're obsessed with.
I'm like halfway through right now with Heather Gudenkauf's Everyone is Watching, which comes out, it's very soon, and like a week or two, it'll be out. It's end of March, I want to say it's out. It's a great book. I've loved everything that Heather has written, but this one has like an edge to it that I'm really loving. It's a reality TV show, kind of like Big Brother. This group of characters, of people, has been invited to this house, but they, you know, they don't know exactly why they were chosen, and strange things are starting to happen. It's getting a little dark and twisty, and it's so good. I mean, it's just, it's so unique, which I love. Let's see. My husband and I have just started watching The Tourist on, I think it's Netflix, which is, it's fun. We're only a few episodes in, but it's so different. It's got Jamie Dornan and it's, it's really good. It's dark, but it also has this like weird quirkiness to it, like a dark comedy to it. So it's fun. I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Oh, that's nice. A good one. Yeah. I've heard good things about that. Well, Mary, thank you so much for joining us again. She's Not Sorry. Like I said, I think it's my favorite. It's so hard to pick favorites when you love them all, but this is really, I think it's up there. And I really want to thank you also for your support of other, it's not just me, but you did kindly blurb The Astrology House, which just meant so much to me and my publishers. And you're so supportive of the whole community. And that's just such a wonderful thing to be a part of. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well, I loved the book and I know that all your fans are going to adore it when it comes out this summer. And it's just a wonderful book. I think that it was like the characters and the relationship. I mean, of course, it's like page turning suspense and so many great mysteries, but the characters and the complex relationships just really, really pulls me in. And I know that it's going to do so well. So I can't wait for everyone to pick up a copy this summer.
Aw, thank you so much.
That's so amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yay.
She's Not Sorry is out now. Yeah. Definitely get a copy and read it.
Yes. Thank you so much.